From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour is being made every day as school administrators, teachers, and parents and students gear up to head back to the classroom. On August 7th, Governor Cuomo announced that schools in New York State will be allowed to reopen. The model under which they do that is up to the districts, and we're seeing various setups across the country. But one thing is similar. This is an unprecedented time. And for teachers and parents who have to make difficult decisions about the fall, there are no ideal solutions. To quote Brighton Central School District Superintendent Kevin McGowan from when he was last on this program, it's time to show respect for people's choices. This hour, we continue our conversations with local superintendents. Our goal is to talk with as many of them as possible about their district's reopening plans before the start of the school year. And if you're a parent or a teacher, our guests today can help you answer your questions. And if you don't have school-age children in your life, what we're discussing regarding schools is still relevant because these are community-wide issues. So I invite you to engage with the program as well. But first, I'd like to welcome my guests, two superintendents who have taken time out of their very busy days to join us. Superintendent Mary Groh of the East Aranaquoit Central School District. Superintendent Groh, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having us today.
Absolutely. Also on the line today, Lori Orologio, superintendent of the Churchville-Chilly Central School District. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Good to be able to talk with you, and also hello to Mary.
Hi, Lori. Nice to hear your voice.
Everyone knows each other. I love it. It's great. Well, as I mentioned, I know you both have very busy schedules, and I appreciate you taking the time to join the show today. We'll have a lot of questions, both from our news team here and from listeners who can call the program at 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI. 263-9994. You can also email the program at connections@wxxi.org. But first, I'd like to ask you both a question. We've had a number of your colleagues on this program in recent weeks, and they probably, like you, are watching districts open across the country. We saw what happened in Georgia, where a student posted a picture of crowded hallways and maskless teens. That school was shut down after a coronavirus outbreak happened in the school, but it reopened the school under a new plan this week. And we're seeing some colleges like North Carolina Chapel Hill canceling in-person classes after just weeks of those in-person classes. So with all this in mind and having the advantage of being able to observe what's happening elsewhere, I'd like to ask each of you what you're learning as you watch others sort of go first through this process. Superintendent Groh, I'll start with you. What are you learning?
Sure. Thanks, Megan. You know, I think that we definitely have an advantage, if you will, by watching what some of our neighboring states are going through right now. And I think, like you had pointed out in Georgia, you saw those photos of students crowded in hallways without masks. And I think, you know, right from the beginning in New York State, this piece of, you know, a mask is probably our best defense to keeping each other safe. That is something that has been just an absolute mandate in all of our plans, that masks are expected in East Aranaquoit schools. They will be worn from the minute a person walks into the school building to the time that they get off the bus, and I think that's really, really important. I think the other piece, you know, when we were putting together our return to school plans to reopen, was making sure we were very mindful of the capacity of bodies inside the buildings at any given time. And again, we're planning so that we don't have those crowded hallway scenarios. So I think, you know, we've watched those incidents. You know, we've learned certainly a lot. We're working very closely together in Monroe County. And, you know, I think that we're absolutely ready to welcome students back by listening and learning from what others are doing and putting plans in place to help with safety.
Superintendent Orologio, what have you learned by watching others go first?
Right. I definitely would agree with what Mary has stated in regard to seeing what people are doing in, as far as social distancing with 6 feet. We, too, are requiring the use of masks at all times. I think we've learned from our teachers as well. We've had some staff meetings with our staff to talk a little bit more about what it's going to look like in the classroom, what instruction will look like, and we've also had several sessions with our community along with our reopening committees that really took into account the guidance documents from the Department of Health in New York State. So we're holding very tightly aligned to the guidance here in New York, and I think the New York guidance has been stronger from what I've seen than it has been in some of the other states that are reopening.
On August 7th, when Governor Cuomo announced that schools could reopen, we actually already had a conversation scheduled with your colleague, Greece Superintendent Kathy Grautman. She was on the program. And she said that the news that Governor Cuomo revealed is what she was hoping to hear. She wanted to reopen her district. Did you feel the same way about the governor's announcement, Superintendent Orologio?
Absolutely. We are so looking forward to having our students back on campus. We miss our students. We want to make sure that they're safe, that they have the opportunity to socialize with one another, check their social emotional health, check in with families. Our families do need to also go back to work, many. So we want to support our families and try to find ways for them to be able to do what they need to do. We've been working with child care agencies to try to make sure that they have internet access on site and supplies and materials to be able to help support the children that go to our local child care agencies. So we're very excited. We had our kindergarten assessment and orientation last week. We brought our kindergartners and families in, so we are just about ready to go.
Superintendent Groh, same question. Were you pleased with the governor's announcement on August 7th?
Absolutely. Yep. I think that is, you know, the culmination of all the work that we've really been doing since March, when we had the notice of the sudden closure. You know, from that day on March 13th, or really March 14th, it was the constant planning of, okay, well, maybe we'll be open in 2 weeks or 2 weeks from there. So to hear that good news, that all of the work that we've been doing with our stakeholder groups, all of the communication with our communities, that was, you know, all of that important information, all those important voices that we needed to have in place. And so when the governor finally said, yep, we're ready to open, and, you know, here's the metric that we're going to follow, you know, I think it was welcome news to absolutely hear that we're going to be able to welcome students back.
Well, both of you have already touched on a number of issues that our listeners have questions about, from masks to childcare and more. So we'll address all of those this hour. But first, let's talk about your individual district's plans for reopening. So, Superintendent Groh, what will returning to East Irondequoit look like in the fall?
Sure, absolutely. Well, we have three scenarios that we planned for. We had 100% return to in-person instruction, and we're really pleased that at our pre-kindergarten through grade 5 levels, we are going to be able to be open 5 days a week for students at those specific grades. At our secondary, which begins in grade 6 and continues on through grade 12, we'll be following a hybrid instructional plan, which we'll divide our students into two cohorts, if you will, and we will have students that will come 2 days a week and be learning remotely on the 3 days that they're not in person, and then that will reverse. So essentially, each of those cohorts will have up to 3 days in any given week that they will be in school on that rotating basis. And then finally, we offered all of our families that option for 100% remote instruction. And those are really the three scenarios that we've planned for. Those are the three scenarios we're ready for, and that's our plan in East Irondequoit.
What percentage of students or families have chosen the all-remote option at this stage? Yeah,
That's a great question. We had about, I'd say we have about 16% of our families, give or take, 16% of our families that have decided, at least for the first 10 weeks of school, to choose that home option of remote learning.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I think you are the first district that we've heard of with a 100% return to in-person instruction. Again, you said that was pre-K through fifth grade. What are some of the accommodations you're making to ensure there's physical distancing and kids aren't, you know, too crowded in hallways or classrooms to enable that 100% return?
Absolutely. For us, it was really a numbers game, and I think that's why it's really different in each of our districts. We just happened to have the right size enrollment at the four elementary buildings that we have in our district, and we were able to accommodate physical distancing in our classrooms within those four buildings. So using our enrollment numbers and our square footage to calculate to make sure that we could guarantee that safe 6-foot proximity, we were able to bring back our students on that 5-day, everyday rotation, if you will. The other piece to that, Megan, is to, again, make sure that we were keeping our children safe, was they're traveling in pods, if you will. So at our elementary levels, our students are staying in the classroom for the large majority of their day. There will be some recess time. We are encouraging our teachers to take our kiddos outside and get some fresh air, to bring their classes out, to do some learning outside, as well as physical education, with also following all the guidelines of SED of 12 feet for that aerobic activity. So we're really, again, as Lori had pointed out, we're following that great guidance from New York State to make sure that as we're planning for any reopening scenario, that we're doing it with all of the safety measures in mind. And we are able to do that at all levels, but particularly for the 5 days every day that's elementary.
And I'm sure it's, as you mentioned, it's different for every district where you have multiple elementary schools, where some districts don't. So you're in a situation that could be different from perhaps a smaller district. So I think that's important to talk about as we continue these conversations on the show. Every district has a different situation. Turning to Churchville Chilai, Superintendent Orologia, what does your model look like for the fall?
So we would have loved to be able to do 100% return, and we did take a look at that. In order for us to do that, we would need that social distance requirement to be reduced from 6 foot to 3 foot. If that is to take place, even if it took place at 10 weeks or 20 weeks, then we certainly would look to bring back 100% of the students of the families that would choose to do so. Unfortunately, we do not have the space due to our enrollment to do that now. So we have also gone with a hybrid model. Our groups, we have a Saints A group that is in person on Monday, Tuesday, and remote Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The Saint B group, again by alpha split, it's A through L and M through Z. So the M through Z group would come on Thursday, Friday, in person and remote Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We also added a Saints C group. So this is for our students with special needs that perhaps are in a special class. And our L learners, so they would actually come 4 days a week, the Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. And we, too, like Mary mentioned, offered 100% full remote. And I'll go out on a limb that your next question, Megan, would be what percentage. So at approximately 3,700 students in our district, we have about 700 students that will be 100% remote. Our model of remote is that they would be placed into classrooms heterogeneously with our hybrid students. So a teacher's classroom would be a mix of in-person in front of them. The students that, and the students that are on remote would come in either via Zoom or one of our other video conferencing links, and they would have the lesson together. So we're not separating our full remote students from our other students. They're still going to be coinciding in the same classrooms.
You beat me to another question that I had in that regard.
Okay.
We've been hearing from parents from many different districts, and the question I'm about to ask or the situation I'm about to discuss is not from a parent in either one of your districts, but this parent said she was unsure whether or not she wanted to choose the full remote option because it sounded to her like her daughter wouldn't be able to see her classmates, wouldn't have as much access to her teacher as this parent would have liked, and some of the curriculum looked like watching YouTube videos, and teachers are stressed, administrators are stressed, everyone's stressed. That is not meant to be a judgment. But this particular parent wanted something that was a little more socially engaging for her daughter. So it sounds like what's happening in Churchville Chilai with that access, either via Zoom or the other video conferencing mm-hmm. option, students are just learning at home, but they're able to still be part of that classroom on nearly daily basis if based on the other hybrid situation. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we did have the opportunity to bring in approximately 18 teachers last week and spent multiple days coming up with lesson planning templates and forums and trying out our platform to make sure that the video streaming or for students to log in would work. So they've tested things out. They've come up with multiple templates to be able to share with their colleagues. We've sent that out to our full staff so that they have an opportunity to kind of take a look at the multiple frames and opportunities. But yes, we are combining our students that are remote with our students that are in person.
What does remote learning look like in East Irondequoit, Superintendent Groh? Is it similar or is it situated a little differently?
Slightly different. So in East Irondequoit, we're a one-to-one district. We've been on this journey since 2014. And so I have to say our teachers do an outstanding job of really utilizing the technology, leveraging that technology to really make instruction really meaningful. And this has been a great opportunity going into this new year of trying some things that are different and sometimes new for us. So to answer your question, we've got a combination. Starting at our elementary level, we will have students that have chosen the remote learning option with a dedicated remote learning teacher for that grade level. So that teacher will be teaching their students on the Microsoft Teams platform. They'll be interacting with their students every single day, and they will be delivering their instruction through that platform. We also use other platforms that are appropriate for the grade levels. So in the case of primary, it would be Seesaw or Schoology or, again, our Office, Microsoft Office Teams network. At the secondary level, the students that are at home, even on the hybrid or if they've chosen that remote learning option, they will be part of a typical class. So if your child is in ninth grade social studies or global history, the teacher may have 26 students on their roster. On any given day, they might only have 13 in front of them. Well, the 13 that are at home, they're connecting in real time synchronously with that classroom teacher, with that classroom of students, and they are on, if you will, this Teams network where they're seeing each other in this remote environment, and they're able to interact in real time, as well as those lessons would be recorded so that the child or the student could tune in later in an asynchronous model where they're, again, not necessarily in real time as the class is being conducted, but at a later time. So it's a pretty dynamic, a very robust learning environment in this virtual landscape.
As I mentioned in the introduction, this is an unprecedented time. I don't think either of you ever prepared for a global pandemic before, if I'm not mistaken. But the same goes for teachers. We're hearing from teachers via email who say that they're struggling with deciding how much to prepare for online. They're worried that some are worried that schools might shut down if infection rates in the county goes up. If the rate goes up, we can talk more about that in a minute. But for listeners who are teachers or parents who are, if you have a lot of questions about these remote learning options, we will be talking to some faculty members from St. John Fisher College on Wednesday about how to create pedagogy for remote learning. So something that may be new to a lot of people, maybe parents, you have questions, tune in Wednesday. I think it's at noon, and we'll have that conversation because, as I said, a lot of this is new to so many of us. So we're learning as we go, which Superintendents Grow in Orologio, you probably feel like you learn something new every day.
Every day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
How involved have teachers in your district been in some of those reopening conversations that you're having, Superintendent Orologio?
Yeah, so from the very beginning with our initial reopening advisory committees, we asked for anyone who was interested. They responded, and they were placed on a committee that they chose to participate on. And we met several times, and they helped to form the foundations of the reopening plan. And then, as I just previously did mention, we have had a number of staff teachers in to take a closer look at what the instructional platform looks like, what lesson planning could look like, kind of to answer that question of what you're looking to talk about on Wednesday, and be able to test out the video platform, the ability to put kids into groups, or the ability to do we want to use a camera? Do we want to use a video conferencing platform? Do we want to use a PowerPoint? Do we want to record lessons? What are we going to do? So they have created a host of options for teachers, and I think that's the important part, is that teachers, while they are in the midst of learning as well, they need some option and some choice too. So it's not just one way and this is the only way it's going to happen. So that's our goal, is to try to meet the teachers where they are. We do have some instructional coaches along with an instructional technology coach. Lots of trainings have been offered over the summer and also posted. So as Mary mentioned earlier, not just for our kids to learn asynchronously, but when we have things posted, teachers can learn on their own time as well. They don't have to be live and synchronous in order to be a part of that professional learning environment.
Is there a percentage of teachers in your district who plan not to return to the classroom?
I don't have a percentage, but I do have a few teachers who have unique situations who are going to need to take the opportunity for a child care leave. But right now it's less than a handful of teachers for us.
We had a teacher reach out to us with a concern about child care. She is a teacher in a local district, and that district has chosen a hybrid model. Her children go to a different district, which is on a different hybrid model. So her schedule is different at school and at home, and she's wondering what to do about child care. And she is asking other districts, so I'll ask each of you, what are you doing to help some of those teachers, if anything, try to balance those two situations, Superintendent Orologio?
So we had a meeting last week with our local child care agencies here in the community, and we've talked with them about what their needs are, if they need us to support them with what we refer to as a MiFi, which is that broadband mobile internet, how to support. And we were able to find out if they had open spots or not, what the costs were. We've reinstated the YMCA, which does a morning and afternoon wraparound program for us here in the district. And actually, we held a staff meeting last week, and we shared all of the resources and information with our staff specific to what child care is local. We did investigate the opportunity of bringing child care into the district, but right now, due to licensing and the Office of Child and Family Services and the length of time it would take in order to process that, that's not an option for us for the first 10 weeks at least.
Mm-hmm. Superintendent Groh, same question for East Irondequoit.
Yeah, and very similar to what Lori had said, you know, it's that piece where there are certainly child care issues, and we've encouraged folks that are experiencing those issues or at least needing some assistance in where to go in the right direction to contact our Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources, and he's been working really individually with each one of those folks to try to help make some accommodations or at least try to point people into the right direction. Similar to what Lori had shared, you know, we were working with really our BOCES, who have been a terrific partner, to try to help consider, or at least to try to help put a local child care agency here in our own district so that we would be able to support our staff. Again, there's some, you know, red tape that goes along with trying to set those things up in these short time frames, but that is something that we're still researching and looking to see if we can make happen for the staff here in East Irondequoit.
Have you seen a percentage of teachers who plan not to return to the classroom for various reasons, whether it's child care, they don't feel comfortable, they're immunocompromised, mm-hmm. they have extended family situations? Have you heard from teachers who have made those types of plans?
Right now, yes, we have. And similarly to what Lori had shared, we probably have a handful of teachers right now who are, or really all staff members, who are not able to return for a variety of reasons, like you pointed out, whether that is a child care issue or there's a family member at home or themselves who are considered high risk. So we've, again, been working individually with each one of those folks to try to help make accommodations that hopefully would get them back into work, and knowing that for some folks that's just not possible and they need to make that decision. And we're respectful of that decision and working closely with them.
And how involved were teachers in your reopening discussions?
Very similar to what Lori had shared, we brought teachers in probably around June, mid-June, early June to have stakeholder groups, and we actually divided. We did a secondary and an elementary instructional stakeholder group amongst other stakeholder groups like social-emotional learning and transportation, et cetera. And so teachers were part of that advisory committee to be able to hear some of the things that the administration might have been thinking, and then also be told, yeah, that's not necessarily going to work for us, and, you know, have you considered this? So they were great problem solvers to have at the table to really give us some great advisement as we crafted our plans.
That's great. I'm glad you said that. We're going to hear from teachers tomorrow at noon on the program, a few local teachers who are interested in sharing their perspectives and their concerns and their questions about going back. But we've heard also from teachers who don't feel as comfortable sharing those, and they don't feel as if they have enough information. Do you feel like the communication from your district, Superintendent Groh, has been transparent to teachers and students and parents?
Yeah, I do. I think so. I have been communicating weekly with the entire staff as we've gone through this closure up until, you know, the reopening. So there's weekly emails that go out that have all the most pertinent, most up-to-date information. I've been sharing the guidance that has come from both the Department of Health at the state level and the local level, as well as the guidance that has come from the Department of Education. So I'm really trying to give all of the information to the teachers, because what's been happening is this information is coming so fast, and it is truly so fluid. It is sometimes changing multiple times in one given day, and really trying to capture that at the end of the week to keep our staff, our groups informed of those changes. Likewise, we've done the community meetings. We've done a staff meeting. Our administrative team here has had separate meetings that are focused on instruction. Our building level administration has been doing faculty meetings via Zoom and really trying to keep people up to date and again, try to answer individual questions as related to a specific staff member to, again, try to help ease the fears and have all the information as they're making some decisions and preparing themselves to return to work. I mean, it's been almost 6 months, and so without a doubt, it's been some time that folks have been here on our campus to see how we've changed our practices, how we've ramped up our cleaning procedures, and you know, I think it's just that kind of almost fear of the unknown, and we're really trying our best to try to, again, help ease those those fears and get people all the information they need to come back to work.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing the phone starting to ring, and listeners will get to your questions and comments in just a few minutes. I have a few more questions of my own for our superintendents before we head to the phones. And the first is about testing. Superintendent Orologio, is a test required for students, a coronavirus test, before returning to the building, if they've chosen that in-person option?
No, we are not requiring a test.
Are you screening employees or students before they come in every day?
Yes, we will have. We are right now in the midst of developing our communication around what's called Pick My Kid app. And basically that app is for families, and they will go on each morning and complete an attestation of the symptoms for their child before they put their child on the bus. We're a complete bus district. However, we have given options to families to drive as well, given the reduced amount of enrollment we can have on a bus. So they will need to do that before their child enters the doors. And I'm sure there will be cases where a family forgets or doesn't fill out that attestation for our children. And then in that case, the nurses will be aware, and then we will certainly take a look and assess the symptoms. For our staff, we have a district-created email that will go out very early each morning, and the staff will need to complete the attestation also before coming on campus.
If a student comes into a school building, their parent has filled out the form and filled it out as everything is fine, but the student arrives at school, maybe doesn't feel well, is showing some symptoms that could or could not be related to the virus. Perhaps it's something as common as a cold or a strep throat, but they're showing some kind of symptom. They go to the nurse. What happens with that student?
Right. So right now, our protocol actually that we've agreed upon, we had a meeting with all of our nurses on Monday this week, and what we've talked through is basically we are actually going to have the nurse go to the room and assess the student briefly outside in the hallway and make a determination of are these new symptoms, are these symptoms related to a pre-existing condition. And I think part of that information is we need to continue to ask our families to make sure we have the most updated information about their children. Again, whether they're diabetic, whether they have allergies or asthma or whatever the case might be. And then the nurse will make a decision based upon that quick assessment of, okay, this child is showing some symptoms of COVID, or this child has these symptoms of a pre-existing condition. And we will have two health spaces available in each of our schools. So one will be one of COVID symptoms, and the other will be the kind of wellness medical center that you normally have for dispersing medications or other things of that nature. So we will have kind of two different rooms set up, and then once in that location, the family will be called to come and pick up their child, and they will be referred to their pediatrician. And then working with the pediatrician, we'll make a determination. The pediatrician will make the determination whether or not, again, is this the cold, is it flu, or is it definitely COVID symptoms, and they require a test. If the pediatrician requires the test, the student would not be able to reenter until we know the results of that test.
And if a student does test positive, what is the protocol for isolation or quarantine or contact mm-hmm. tracing?
Yep. For us, we would take the lead then from the Monroe County Department of Health because, again, we are not medical physicians. That's not our role. So we would work in conjunction with them in cooperation and collaboration with the families to try to provide the information that's needed. So if it's a student that were in maybe an elementary classroom that has only been in that elementary classroom and not interfaced throughout the building, that could be a different recommendation from the Monroe County Department of Health, rather than if it's a student that maybe is in the high school and does transition class to class and interfaces with a variety of adults and students. So again, we would work with the Department of Health and the family and make a decision whether or not we need to shut down a classroom, the building, or the district. It really honestly is dependent upon what gets recommended to us.
By the Department of Health.
Correct.
The county Department of
County,
Health.
Yes.
Thank you. Superintendent Groh, same question. Are tests required before students or faculty return to your buildings?
No, they're not.
And are you screening employees or students as they return to in-person instruction?
very similar to what Churchville is doing, East Irondequoit is also doing. The only addition I would say, beyond having the assessment for all students and all staff to complete prior to entering our building, at every one of our buildings, the staff and students will pass through a mass screening device, and that is a temperature reader. So every single person coming into any of our buildings will go through that. Obviously, if there's an elevated temperature over 100 degrees, they would be pulled out and have a second assessment with the school nurse. And that's, again, just to ensure that there isn't any kind of false positive, and just to make sure, again, that students who are coming in or people that are coming in that may be symptomatic, that we're trying to, you know, get them out of the mix, if you will, and have them, for us, in an isolation area, again, where they would be assessed by the school nurse, and then they would work with the family to make sure that that child or that person is getting the follow-up for their health care provider, pending any kind of symptoms.
And if a student does test positive for the virus, what is the protocol from that point?
Very similar to what Lori had shared, the same thing. We will be taking our lead and working very closely with the local Department of Health, and they are really going to be a partner for all of the Monroe County school districts in this journey. It's, again, making sure that if this person is symptomatic, that we are getting them in touch with their health care provider, because they will give them the best guidance. That is not something that the school can do. That is absolutely something that the health care provider has to do. If they are to come back positive, if that result comes back positive, then obviously they wouldn't be able to come into school until it was deemed safe. So again, depending on where they are in their infection, if you will, it could be as few as 10 days, as great as 14 days. But again, they would have to come back with a negative test result and that, you know, assurance from their healthcare provider that they are no longer COVID positive.
We have a lot more questions, those from both our staff here and our listeners. So I want to thank our superintendents for being so patient with all of these questions. I'm sure you've discussed these issues to the point of exhaustion, but they're also important, and we're grateful for your time this afternoon. We're going to take our short break in just a moment. Listeners, if you would like to join the program, you can call 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. That's 263-WXXI. You can also email your questions to connections@WXXI.org. Just a little disclaimer, we're kind of short-staffed today, so be patient with us on the phone as our engineer Rob and I try to work through everything as quickly as we can, but we promise we will get to you. So a short break and more Connections next. I'm Megan Mack. Friday on the next Connections, we've heard from local superintendents and parents about reopening schools, and now it's time to hear from teachers. In our first hour, we're joined by local teachers who share their perspectives and their concerns about going back to school. Then in our second hour, ACT Rochester and the Rochester Area Community Foundation share their latest hard facts report about racial and ethnic disparities in the Rochester area. Talk to you Friday. This is Connections. I'm Megan Mack sitting in for Evan Dawson today. We're talking with two local superintendents about their district's reopening plans for the fall. Mary Groh is superintendent of the East Irondequoit Central School District, and Lori Orologio is the superintendent of the Churchville-Chilai Central School District. We've covered a lot of ground, but let's now move on to masking policies, mask wearing in your district. Superintendent Groh, what's your district's policy when it comes to masks?
Yeah, thanks, Megan. We have, again, an expectation that everybody who enters our buildings will be wearing a cloth face covering, a mask that covers their nose and their mouth, and that they will have it on for the duration of while they're in our buildings. For our students, we will be building in mask breaks throughout the day, again, all to ensure safety for our students. If there are children that have a medical exemption from wearing a mask, then we will make accommodations, which would include a physical barrier for that child, again, in 6-foot social distancing between all children, again, to keep everybody safe. So we actually have board policy as well to support that masking policy. We're taking it very seriously in terms of making sure that everybody who comes into our facilities are wearing a face covering.
When it comes to the mask breaks, I know those are mandated by the state. Who can make the decision about when the masks can be taken off? Is that the teacher? Is that a principal?
It's both, actually. Yep, absolutely. You know, the teachers are going to be working closely with the students, and they will see them for the longest amount of any one period of time. And so they are going to be the ones that can determine when masks can be coming off, when the breaks are appropriate. Likewise, at some of our buildings, the principals may use the announcements to add a little levity and get kids, you know, taking off their masks for, again, an appropriate mask break.
And when it comes to enforcement, of course, we want everyone to be educated about the issue. And if a student is not wearing a mask and has been spoken to multiple times, refuses to wear the mask, or is just having trouble, young kids, maybe they have a little trouble remembering or or something happens in their social groups, how are you talking to kids about that policy? And what happens if a student needs a little more than a discussion?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Megan. And in part of the, you know, coming back to school is, again, really focusing on that social emotional piece and really, you know, giving kids obviously some strategies and some tools to wear the mask. And again, if they're having trouble to ask for assistance, you know, nobody's looking to discipline a child because they're not wearing a mask. But this is also a very, very serious public safety and public health concern. And so that's why the masks are so important. So we want to work with our students, work with our families, but students must comply with that masking policy, as is any visitor who comes into our buildings. We do have that remote learning option if folks feel like, nope, they've tried and they just cannot tolerate it. You know, that's the option, but, you know, certainly we want everybody here and safe, and that's why the masks are so important.
When it comes to buses and transportation where students are a little more congregated than they might be on or in a classroom, I know the 6-foot rule still probably applies to buses. What does that look like, and what does masking look like on buses?
Sure. Similarly to the classroom, only, you know, typically our largest buses accommodate up to 50 students or close to it. This year is certainly very different. We won't have any more than 22 students on a bus unless they're from the same household. If they're from the same household, we can go up a little bit more than that 22 because the students will be sitting in the same bench, the same bus bench, if you will. All students on our buses will be required to wear a face covering. All students will be in an assigned seat in the bus. And again, that will help with contact tracing, that if we are to have any COVID cases, that's where we're going to work closely with the local Department of Health to, again, go through and make sure that we're covering all our bases, whether it's the classroom or the school bus. So students, one per bench, unless they're from the same household. We will cap that at 22, again, unless they're from the same household. And everybody will be wearing a face covering, including our bus drivers.
Great. And Superintendent Orologio, same question. What is the masking policy in Churchville Chile?
So the same as Mary mentioned, it is required. We also, too, do have statements and information out to families to let them know. We did actually have a conversation with families with some information that was mailed to talk with them about if they really do not want their child to wear a mask or do not feel that their child will be able to endure that, that maybe full remote for the first 10 weeks would be an option they would want to consider. We are not looking to punish students either. As Mary mentioned, this is a teaching and learning opportunity given the health and safety risks. And I think that we have to show a little bit of patience because this is a new protocol for everyone, including our staff as well. I think for those of us that have been at work and on site for a couple of months now, it's pretty normal routine to put your mask on anytime you move about the building or spaces. But I do think for our staff and our children who have been at home, coming back for both adults and children, it is going to be a little bit of a change. So I think, again, it is about teaching and learning, not about punishment. However, if we do find that maybe young adults are choosing not to, don't want to, or the families really decide, you know what, I don't want them wearing a mask, that they would be able to transition, should they choose to the remote learning option. And again, similar to Mary, we're looking at the first 10 weeks to try to get things underway and see what we need to do to assess and monitor. But masks are required both in the school district as well as on the school buses.
And what does the busing situation look like? Is it similar to what's happening in East Irondequoit?
It is actually exactly the same. So we will put up to 22 students if they're single per seat. If it is a family, then we can add a few more students. But again, masks will be required. We are looking at the opportunity on nicer days where it's over 45 degrees to lower the windows to try to get some airflow on the buses, especially because we do know that in September, typically we do have some warmer weather. So the bus drivers will take their lead in the morning and afternoon when they see what the weather and temperature is like and then make that decision.
When you mention airflow, I know we've touched briefly on the option of outdoor classes. Is that something that you're pushing forward with many teachers in your district, outdoor when you can be?
Yes, actually, we've had several teachers who have asked that question. We did address that again last week at our staff meeting that we had, and we've done a frequently asked question that we've distributed to our staff. We absolutely can have our classes go outdoor. That could happen, too, for recess, also for physical education classes, as Mary had mentioned earlier. So, yes, teachers will certainly be able to take the students outside and have opportunities to learn outside, obviously weather appropriate.
And Superintendent Groh, outside of gym classes or recess, are you considering classes outside?
Absolutely. In fact, we're also putting up some pop-up tents around our six buildings to encourage that our teachers take out their classrooms whenever it's appropriate. Again, we're not going to have a lot of great weather as we go back to school. Hopefully, we can get as much as we possibly can. But while these nice days last, we're absolutely encouraging our teachers to bring their classes outside.
So looking ahead to when our Rochester weather is not as beautiful as it is now, I have some questions for you about airflow and ventilation in classrooms. Mm-hmm. Writing for The Atlantic, Zeynep Tufekci said, quote, "It seems baffling that despite mounting evidence of its importance, we are stuck practicing hygiene theater, constantly deep cleaning everything while not noticing the air we breathe. How is it that 6 months into a respiratory pandemic, we still have so little guidance about this all-important variable, the very air we breathe?" End quote. And the article was about HVAC systems and portable air filtration systems. So two questions for each of you. Has the county or state provided any guidance about ventilation or filters or HVAC systems for your districts? And are the districts making any changes to your symptoms prior to reopening? Mm-hmm. Superintendent Groh.
So I will say that we've been working, our facilities management team has been outstanding, and they've been working very closely with our HVAC provider, and they've literally gone through every single one of our buildings to do an assessment of our air filtration systems, and they have made adjustments, including changing filters to upgrade the actual filters that are going to be in all of our buildings. So without a doubt, that is something that there hasn't been a ton of great information in terms of what to look for or, you know, specificity, but we've really depended on both our architects and our HVAC providers to be our guide in all of this, and they've done an outstanding job. But that is something that, yes, we monitor very closely, and that we did a deep research and then deep change if necessary to make these improvements.
Superintendent Orologio, are you discussing ventilation systems and filters?
We actually have discussed that a few weeks ago when we were looking at what the requirements were for ventilation. We worked with our director of operations and maintenance, again, walking through the schools, taking a look at each of the classrooms, making sure that their filters and ventilation were working appropriately. We have had a lot of construction over the past 5 to 10 years, so a lot of our spaces have been upgraded during that time. So we're specifically looking at some of our buildings or classrooms that haven't been recently updated to make sure that they are up to code and that we have the appropriate level filters in the buildings, which we do. And again, working with, we had a recent fire inspection and things of that nature, so they are also taking advantage of that opportunity to have the conversation with those that are inspecting our buildings.
Here's a question from a listener via email. And the question is, how are these schools addressing staff who are at high risk of COVID-19 health dangers but must interface with multiple students and adults daily? We'll start with you, Superintendent Orologio.
So I think that individual, as Mary and I discussed early on, that individual should certainly reach out to our HR personnel and have that personal conversation. I also think the individual needs to work with their own medical physician to find out, is it appropriate for them to return to school or not to school? Since we are offering in-person instruction, if we were a district that went to 100% full remote and no in-person, I think it would be a different conversation. But for us, we are really all in-person in some way, shape, or form. So they really need to work with their medical physician. Again, we're not doctors, so I would leave it to the medical professional to make that determination.
And Superintendent Groh, what's happening in East Irondequoit for staff members or faculty members who may have some health concerns in that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I echo what Lori said, and I think I brought this up before. When we've had families, or excuse me, if we've had individual staff members that have had some health concerns, we have directed them to have conversations, again, case by case, with our assistant superintendent for human resources, who's walked each person through, you know, what their particular health concern is, and, you know, can we make an accommodation here to bring them back to work safely, and if they have a pre-existing medical condition and their health care provider has said, nope, they can't come back, they're too high risk. Obviously, we've honored that, but that's, again, Lori offered some great advice that they really need to work very closely with their own health care provider. Only they can give them the guidance. The schools are certainly not medical or doctors or, you know, equipped to do that. So I encourage them to work with their own health care provider.
Of course, everyone is hoping that we don't see an uptick in cases when schools reopen. And I know you both are working with the county closely on different issues related to schools reopening. Is there a sense of a measuring point for when either a school building or the entire district or whatever it is may need to be closed based on infection rates, either within that particular building or even in the county itself? Superintendent Groh, is there a point that's been determined at this stage?
You know, I don't think there's been any kind of definitive point yet. I think that, again, it's, you know, we're looking at really who gets sick in the classroom. Again, nobody wants that to happen. But if a teacher or a student gets sick in a particular classroom, that's where it's going to be so important to work so closely with local DOH and do the contact tracing, really trying to find out, okay, was this something, had this person already been, you know, infected? Have they been just asymptomatic? And now we know that they have, you know, COVID because they've, again, consulted health care and they know they had a positive COVID test. You know, I think that, again, this may be something where you would be potentially looking at closing a classroom perhaps for 24 hours or potentially moving a class to a remote instruction for an extended period of time. I think if there were multiple outbreaks, we would take a different approach. Again, it all depends on, you know, the number of positive cases in a particular space. And I think we have to work closely with local DOH and rely on their expertise and their guidance and be great partners and collaborators with them to help get those answers that are absolutely in the best interest of all when it comes to health and safety. So there isn't necessarily a metric. Certainly the governor has provided metrics when it comes to deciding whether or not we were going to open schools in New York. And again, locally in Monroe County, I think we're at -1% for an infection rate, which is pretty outstanding. So we're going to rely, again, absolutely rely on the local officials that have done such a nice job to give us that information. We'll continue to work closely with them to provide those guidance and make decisions.
Superintendent Orologi, is it pretty similar in Churchville-Chili?
It is, and we do not have a specific metric other than the one that the governor had proposed, and we understand that that is kind of like a light switch, if you will. Right now we're on and we're open, and if the community spread were to increase to that metric that he indicated, then obviously we would all end up being closed. I think also we'll take a look, as Mary mentioned, you know, what is the spread, if there is, within any one of our schools or buildings, such as we might during flu season. You know, there are times when there are so many students that don't attend school or staff that the illness is happening, whether COVID-related or not. This would have happened in prior years with a flu. So we look at that. We monitor our numbers of wellness and those that are unable to attend. And so that also could be a point in which it would trigger us to have to maybe transition to a remote for a little bit if we get into an area such as that.
Mm-hmm. We had a listener named Keith on the line with a question that I'll do my best to paraphrase, and it may not be the best question to ask you with only just a couple minutes left in our program, but he had a concern or a question related to budgeting and cuts. Of course, with PPE and pandemic planning, there are probably some expenses that you didn't expect to see. I know that districts are looking at a different situation with the state, too. The city school district is talking about another massive wave of cuts. Are you looking at mid-year cuts if there's not any help from local or state governments to help cover some of these perhaps unexpected costs? Superintendent Orologio?
So I think right now what we have done with our budget for this year is we were aware that there could be a potential reduction. So we were pretty cautious in identifying the funds that we had and pretty transparent with our community. Through the spring, we did not have to offer transportation because we were unable to do so. So we did have some diesel costs, if you will, that were still in the budget, as well as some substitute costs. So we strategically used that money against the budget for this year to try to reduce the need of what we have. So we were pretty well planned with that. So we knew that there would be an upcoming reduction. So we're seeing right now about a 20% reduction. We may be able to make it through this year with that. However, if that increases, then I think we're going to end up coming back to the drawing board, as well as if we were to go to remote. So right now we are using all of our facilities. We're using all of our staff. We plan with the in-person instruction to use transportation. We have all of our nutritional services, all of our O&M staff, everybody's here. So we're running a regular school year with a regular budget. Should that change and we move to remote and we no longer are going to utilize transportation or other services, certainly that would be an area to kind of take a look at. The challenge is we just don't know how long anything's going to be. So in the spring, we kept hoping it's just 2 weeks, and then it was three. And then we were like, okay, maybe it's just a month. We'll come back in May, and then it was June. So that's the difficult part.
Absolutely. And Superintendent Groh, very quickly, are you anticipating mid-year cuts if we don't see a big change?
You know, I'll echo what Lori said. You know, we really budgeted for the new year with kind of some of the idea of there was potential for cuts, you know, in the following year. I think that it goes without saying, though, we absolutely need the federal stimulus support. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely going to be key to our long sustainability here. And so, yeah, there's a lot of unexpected costs that went into the new year just because of PPE,
absolutely.
Extra staffing, things like that. So, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you both. I'm sorry we're out of time. These conversations require a lot of questions and answers, but thank you both very much for joining
me.
Superintendent
Groh
and Superintendent Orologio. My thanks to Rob Braden for helping us out all week. Of course, Dave Andriotta for filling in for Evan. I'm Megan Mack. Evan will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.